Hello and welcome everybody to the Melomancy Podcast, episode 92. My name is Dylan.
My name is Victim.
I'm Rick.
And this is the first ever Value for Value podcast about video games. More on that in a minute.
Yeah, suck it, everybody else.
How have you guys been?
Tired.
Tired. Victim joining us from getting out of bed.
Pretty much. It's been so fucking warm out. My allergies have been deciding to be an asshole. And so I like end up sleeping longer or I wake up fucked up. It's so annoying, dude. I hate summer now.
Dude, same. I'm really glad I bought solar panels because like I have had my air conditioner going for like a month straight and my power bill was like $10. So
we only normally have hot weather for like extreme hot weather anyways, for like a month out of the year. So having an air conditioning unit is like not in the cards. So I'm sitting here with like a fan and my window open and praying
to RNGesus that yep. Anyway, let's go ahead and start with the boosts actually. So if you are a first time listener, I will give you the brief that what Value for Value means for podcasting is some really smart folks over at podcastindex.net came up with some new enhancements for the RSS standard that makes a podcast, which gives us things like boostograms, which are kind of like Twitch donations or YouTube super chats, right? Also things like streaming sats, which is like bits, I guess, for Twitch, like little things you can give over time. I don't think that's how bits work, but whatever. But the point is,
some people treat them like that.
Yeah.
They don't normally work like that, but they can.
But Podcasting 2.0 is the name, and there is some other cool features like transcripts and stuff. Longtime listener of the show, Merlin, gave us a boost. I'm looking at the Fountain app, and I'm not sure if it's 20,000 sats or 25,644 sats. It's one of them. I'm just not sure which one. But thank you, Merlin, for the generous boost. He says, can you advertise DEG mods on Geyser Fund? We are looking for funding for a mod site built on Noster. And let me tell you, I don't do advertisements. But I will tell the dear listeners what the hell you just said and what those words mean. I looked into it and I have a lot of nice things to say. So where do I start? So first, I want to give some background for the sake of any first-time listeners who might be listening for the first time, who aren't familiar with Value for Value or not familiar with Noster, because if I don't get these few points out of the way, the rest of what I'm about to say isn't going to make any sense, right? So first of all, if this is your first Value for Value podcast, it pleases me to be the first to explain to you that Bitcoin and crypto are not the same fucking thing. And if you have combined the negative traits of those two concepts together as one blob of awful, it's time to separate those thoughts in your head because they're not the same fucking thing. For context, there are these people out there. They call themselves Bitcoin maximalists, or maxis for short. They will give you an extreme explanation and position that all crypto is a scam and only Bitcoin is right. I'm sure that's not quite right either, but
wait, they call themselves maxis like the pads?
No. That'd be kind of funny, though. I'm sure the crypto stans will probably say that about them. But
oh, man, what a terrible choice.
They do get a lot right, though, right?
I'm not dogging them. I'm just saying that they made a terrible choice.
It's a funny name. But they're right about a lot of things. Like, for example, there's this trend where the SEC, which is the Securities and Economics Trade Commission, whatever, they go after crypto projects often. For example, they recently knocked down Library, which is the backbone for Odyssey, which we've talked about in the past. They've also gone after other tokens in the past. And the reason why they even can do this is because a lot of these Web3 crypto bullshit projects, they're run like stocks, right? The SEC will sue you into the ground if you launch a token that is like a stock, right? So like, what Bitcoin offers is that there's no company to sue, there's no creator to sue, there was no pre-mining, and it's proof of work. So with proof of work, that means the people mining the tokens have the central the authority in the network, whereas things like Ethereum and that, it's whoever has the most of the tokens, right? So the rich say what goes.
Like the real world.
Yeah. So Bitcoin values the miners, whereas all those other ones, they value the people who are hoarding the most wealth. If that sounds good to you, you know, just keep listening. So the reason I had to explain all that shit is because Geyser Fund is a website that's kind of similar to either Product Hunt or maybe Kickstarter. But they not only do they do cash, they also do Bitcoin. More specifically, Satoshis, which is the smallest unit of a Bitcoin, named after the theoretical creator of Bitcoin, Satoshi Nakamoto, or whatever the fuck his name is, right?
Sounds real to me.
It's totally a fake name. But yeah, so anyways, with that out of the way, right? So DEG Mods, when I, it's a project by someone on Noster named Freakoverse. I think we're mutuals. Actually, let me check. I'm not sure. I definitely follow him. I don't know if he follows me back. Oh, lame. We do not follow each other back. That's lame.
Okay, Freakiverse. I see how it is.
Better fucking follow me back, dude. No, so it's really funny because when I first read the name DEG Mods, I thought it stood for Degenerate Mods because Freakiverse's avatar and profile picture in all of his videos and his content is like this, like, attractive, like, anime fox woman in modeled in 3D using Koikatsu. If you know what that is, you know what that is.
Oh, okay.
Right? Yeah, so, but right. He has, like, this deep, smooth, like, European accent. And it's, like, the contrast, I think, is really funny. So I will link in the show notes a link to the Geyser Fund page, right? They currently have $1,521 contributed. But the entire concept is to use the Noster protocol to distribute mod packages. So the idea is, like, Noster is a protocol kind of like how HTTP is a protocol. And we've all seen the piracy websites and shit online for, like, anime and shit, right? But you'd sue the website, not HTTP. That's not a thing you can sue, right? So for the same reason, you can't take Noster down, right? But the content has to be hosted somewhere. So, like, these mod creators would have to, like, I don't know, go to Mega Upload or some other file hosting site. And when they make their post saying, hey, I'm such and such, this is my mod, it does this, these are the instructions, these are the download links. If you were posting illegal content and, like, say Disney or Ubisoft or somebody wanted to sue you, you would have to go after Mega or Catbox or whatever your files are hosted and take that down there, right?
Right.
And then your post just becomes a dead link, right? And if you, running an instance of DEG Mods, because it's going to be something that you can host yourself, kind of like a Fediverse instance, right? The posts are all unique, right? But you're downloading it from the same pool of the Noster network, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, anybody could kick off of one of these websites just with a domain name, and you can mute or remove any posts that you don't personally like. They're still out there on the network for someone else to, you know, surface on their version of the website.
Right.
But you do have the option to, like, you know, knock some stuff off that you don't want to see, right?
Right.
You can't just flood it with the real degenerate stuff, right?
With Discord moderator stuff.
Right. For all the Discord moderators of the world. But yeah, so, God, my notes are such a mess. I thought I was ready for this, but, like, my bullets are, like, a mile wide.
It's okay. But yeah, so, like, I looked into this one too, because you know, I was the brave one who clicked the link first. The whole idea behind it is, if they post something, say a Pokemon Pow World mod, to Nintendo can't make it go away.
Well, they could certainly try, right?
They can try, but it's a lot harder.
Right. Whereas with Nexus Mods, which is a direct response to Nexus Mods would just bend the knee immediately, and probably moderate it before Nintendo even found it, right?
Yeah.
Now, there is an example that Freakiverse gives in his little intro video. I don't know if you found the Geyser Fund page. I know the link you clicked on was their demo.
I went to the actual
demo site, yeah. But the Geyser Fund page is a little bit more articulate.
Oh, good.
Probably should have clicked that link first. But
yeah,
it includes, like, an introductory video and some blurb text. But the mod that pushed Freakiverse over the edge seems was the reversion mod for Final Fantasy VII Remake. So 4 years later, after Final Fantasy VII Remake came out, they added an extra, like, undershirt to Tifa's model for the flashback scenes when she's, like, 16 or something, right? And, like, mm-hmm. her original model was fine. It wasn't, like, sexy or anything, right? But like right. the added undershirt is like really distracting because it's like clearly out of place and slapped on. And all the mod did on the Nexus mod site was revert it to what it was before the patch. Yeah. And that mod was like immediately banned, and I think the creator might have got banned as well. And it's like, why? That's such an extreme response.
Let me get this straight. On Nexus mods?
On Nexus mods.
You know,
mods,
the place where you get the first mod in every Elder Scrolls game, which is them bouncing big old titties.
Right.
There is two separate sex mods that you can self-configure. I won't tell anyone why you would need to self-configure these. That can allow for something much more egregious than Tifa not having an undershirt.
Right. Now...
So, and this is available on Nexus mods. Two of them, by the way.
To be fair, this is about her underage 16-year-old flashback model, right? So it's
we're talking about the same thing.
It's dangerous to... Oh goodness. Never mind.
Yeah.
But it's like, it feels like a gross overreaction because it's not like they're making the model sexy or anything, right? They're just turning it back to what it was before the patch, because there's this ongoing online discourse, like especially around Stellar Blade for PS5, where it's like, mm-hmm. people want what was on the disc, but they also want the new features that get patched in, but they don't want some of the creative choices that were made. Now, we've talked previously on this show about how that probably wasn't censorship. They were actually copyright infringing on a real crowling brand and didn't want to admit it. But... What if you wanted that outfit? Well, modding would allow you to downpatch just that part and otherwise patch up the rest of the game, which is basically what this Tifa mod was. Like, it's like, I want what was in the last patch without patching down.
Yeah. Nexus mods really shouldn't be cracking down on that, but I'm glad that someone's, like, basically fighting back against it, because it's just, like, anything that's, like, egregious and out there and that's obvious, yeah, sure. Okay, fair. They are the ones that are in the forefront of the attention. But, like, things like that, man, come on now. I'm glad somebody's telling them to go fuck themselves.
Seriously, like, Nexus Mods is, like, really quickly becoming, like, the Reddit of mods. It's doing to mods what Reddit did to forum discussions, and I don't like to see it. Like,
I mean, that's what, I mean, to be fair, there's been a lot of responses out there to it, too. So I'm just glad there's more. Because the more places you can get mods and upload your mods and just whatever, honestly, the less monopolized it ends up being, so...
Okay, so in the context of where, like, DEG mods could go, right? Like, for example, there's this one super degenerate visual novel that I've read. I've not finished it. I'm, like, in, like, Act 3 or something. It's called Corrupted Kingdoms. I get it from itch.io, right? It is... I don't necessarily recommend it because the beginning of the story is, like, kind of rapey. Like, it was kind of gross. I nearly dropped it, but, like, it got way better and, like, it, like, dodged the bullet of the weirdness, right? But there was actually a controversy with the game where the guy had that was making it, he had to basically make his patrons go to Subscribestar, because he had both. But Patreon ended up banning him because there's a feature in his game where the various women in your harem, you can impregnate them and they will actually bear children who then for storyline reasons immediately age up to like fucking 6 or something. And you can name them and nothing lewd ever happens to them and they're never exposed to anything inappropriate. They're just fucking kids. It's like having kids in The Sims, right?
Yeah. No, I get where you're coming from. But their mere presence of children is a problem for
Patreon, apparently. That was their gripe with the game. And it's like,
From what I understand, Patreon will nuke content for a plethora of reasons, and a lot of the times it's like a catch-all, like a very general sense of things, and it's weird. I mean, it's weird sometimes. Sometimes it makes sense, but for the most part, it's weird. Patreon's always been like, they've always been really weird about like what they will and won't. Like, for a while, you weren't even allowed to do pornographic stuff on there, and then all of a sudden, one day, they're like, hey, fuck it, you can. Like, are we allowed? You're not going to ban us this time?
Yeah, well, good on Subscribestar. They actually have an entire separate business division. Yeah. I think it's called Subscribestar Adult or something. Yeah.
Oh, definitely good on them.
Yeah. So his future is safe and secure, but only because his community was so passionate about the project and they were willing to go from Patreon to the other thing. And they were in the Discord. They received the message. They understood what was happening. Some patrons probably were left in the dark if that was their only update avenue, right? But they came through for him, and that was really cool to see. But it will happen again. It'll happen to other creators who are either not prepared for it or not having the right level of support to survive it. And so I could totally see something like DEG mods going forward with the value for value thing than in the Bitcoin support, where you can basically tip with Satoshis to support your favorite mod creators, or in my scenario, degenerate visual novel authors. Right.
Same thing, right?
Right. And it's like, you could support them without a greedy middleman or a egregious moderator that wants to impose moral authority over you. Because, like, there's, in hindsight, really nothing that wrong with the game. Like, the beginning of the story, there's some sketchy shit with like mind breaking and stuff. But like they drop it really quickly, and the story becomes very much worth your time. But I'm still kind of on the fence about actually recommending that degenerate visual novel. If you're looking for a degenerate visual novel and you know are caught up on the ones you are currently reading, go for it. Otherwise, maybe start somewhere else. But that's all I have to say about that. So yeah, fuck Nexus mods.
Yeah.
What's our next story of the day? What do you guys want to talk about? Got a couple ideas.
You know, we could do the quick one. The because it got solved quickly. The EDF.
Yeah.
So EDF 6 is out, right? And I don't know, man. I have not played an EDF game, but they look so fucking fun, dude. Oh my god. And this new one looks just as fun as the ones that came before. Mm-hmm. But when it came out to mostly negative reviews on Steam, because apparently it requires an Epic Game Store account to log in on the Steam version, which is I'm trying to think, like, why that would even be required, because it wasn't, like, Epic exclusive. Like, that's what I would have expected, right? Like, mm-hmm. Are they, for the PC version, like, using Epic services to make the servers work or something? Like, what is up with that?
Yes, that is exactly what they're doing. They didn't like their original server host when they were hosting servers for their previous games. So, on PC, they now use Epic Games to... Epic Games server hosting to host their servers, and I haven't gone through to double check on the previous games. I don't believe those games require Epic, like, logins to crossplay, or not even to crossplay, because that's the issue. Is it, even if you aren't crossplaying, say, like Risk of Rain 2, who has a crossplay setting, and you click the checkbox or you don't. And the fact of the matter is that they couldn't be asked to do this, because the game's, like, actually 2 years old. They're a Japanese company that subscribes to the old Japanese motto of, we release it 2 years in Japan and then we ship it to the West.
Oh, so it's already been out in Japan?
Yeah, it's, like, 2 years old in Japan. Oh. That's why it looks kind of like a PlayStation 3 game.
I thought they all looked like that.
They do always look like, but, like, these are, like, cheap games. Like, make no mistake, EDF is
games, effectively, yeah.
Is EDF games are really fun games, but they're, like, held together with spit and duct tape.
Yeah. So I have the Steam charts up, and despite the negative reception of the whole Epic Game Store account thing, I'm noticing that as of, like, 2 hours ago. Oh, actually, let me refresh this. As of mere seconds ago, there are 10,380 players on the new game on Steam, but, like, the all-time peak of the previous game was only 8,362. So, like, they're doing pretty good compared to last game. But, like, they had to have seen this coming. Like, maybe it's because Epic is a PC store that they didn't think that the Helldivers Sony thing was going to bite them in the ass, right? Because mm-hmm. with Helldivers, the Sony requirement is obviously worse because of the country restrictions, and it's Sony. It's like, why would a PC gamer have a Sony account? Like, that makes sense, right? There's less concessions to be made with the argument for Epic Store because it is a PC thing. It's not country restricted as far as I know. And a lot of people actually enjoy claiming the free games and nothing else with Epic, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't begrudge people who have Epic Game accounts to do that, but, like, this is the reason I haven't bought the game, because I don't have an Epic Game account, and I'm never going to have one.
Yeah.
Like, unless I require one to play PC games at all, which, if that happens, I'll just stop playing PC games.
Yeah, just get a Nintendo.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like... a lot of this, and I know I've said it before on the podcast, I say it off the podcast too, is me putting my money where my mouth is, right? Like, when I say I can't support companies, even if they have games that I want to play, if I don't like said company, that makes me just a coward and a liar if I still buy Assassin's Creed, for instance.
Yeah.
Even though I don't like Ubisoft.
So, like, I'm in a similar dilemma, right? Because I said, you know, I'll happily support Epic Game Store when it's available for Linux. And it's still not. And Tim Sweeney still thinks Linux is bad. But, like, there are a lot of really good community-made tools that effectively bring Epic Game Store to Linux with basically full the same compatibility layers that Steam has, right? They even got it to work on the Steam Deck with, like, a plugin that's, like, super easy. So it's, like, it's never been easier to play Epic Game Store mods on Linux. I dare say it's easier to play an Epic Game Store game on Linux than it is to just wing it, right? Like, I could install the programs I'm referring to, create an Epic Games account, and I could play Zenless Zone Zero on my Steam Deck first try, no problem. But I can't get Genshin Impact to work without a lot of trouble.
Big rip.
Because I gotta download the EXE from their website, and I gotta do a bunch of bullshit, and it's like, it's actually easier to play an Epic Games Store account than just winging a standalone game. Of course, Steam would be king at compatibility. That's like, that's the Steam Deck's entire value proposition, is you just click a button and it works, right? But it's just a couple extra buttons for Epic, and it's like, it's not officially supported. So it's like, I probably still shouldn't make an account, but it's like, it's real tempting though, because those tools are really good, and they work, and they're tested, and I don't know. I feel kind of weird about it.
Yeah. No, I'm just not a big fan of Epic.
Yeah, there's lots of dislike.
Yeah, and that the Epic game, like, the original, like, we, you know, why don't, you know, give the Epic Games Store a chance? You know, Steam's been out for 20 years or fucking whatever, right? Like, you know,
Means they have a better blueprint to pull from, and they didn't.
Yeah. Like, if I bought a cell phone today, and it was a flip phone, not a touchscreen phone, I wouldn't give them a second chance, you know, give them 10 years to catch up.
Right.
Like, no. You've got, like Vic just said, you've got a fucking blueprint, use it.
Yeah, and like, developers that originally supported Epic, they were itching to ditch Steam. They're like, yeah, I don't like how much they take from us. And it's like, Epic swooped in and are like, we'll take the minimum, we'll even pay you, like, just for being there, and people still hate it. Their store is that bad.
Yeah, well, like, to my knowledge, have they actually, Vic, you've got it. Have they implemented a cart yet?
I don't even have it anymore.
Oh, okay.
I nuke it off my system every once in a while, just because it's annoying.
But yeah, to my knowledge, they still don't have a cart, like a shopping cart.
Last time I used it, like a couple months ago, they didn't.
Okay, so yeah. Like, why not? It's not like, yeah, you don't really need it, but like, it's a quality of life thing that is super easy to do. I don't understand. I genuinely don't understand why, you know, people are constantly being told to eat crow.
I don't get it either, man. But EDF6 is out. Maybe I'll just play it on PlayStation.
Honestly, I would. Like, if I had a PlayStation, I'd just play it there. Because it's a third-person shooter, so you're not really terribly losing out by using a controller for aiming. Also, you don't really have to aim in EDF.
Fair.
Not unless you're doing very specific things, but for the most part, you can just kind of wing it.
I think one of the previous EDF games actually had split screen as well on PlayStation. Mm-hmm. So, like, if that is a thing, then that's another good reason to get it on PlayStation, just because, like, that's easier for my living room.
Oh, yeah.
I'm still, like, you know, all in on physical games. That's why I'm so passionate about, like, what DEG Mods is doing with the example they gave with the down patching, right? It's like, there's a surprising amount of physical games that are still truly physical, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, the shit on the disc is actually the game. It's not just a download code, like many doomers would say, right? It's actually not that bad. In that same vein, like, I recently pre-ordered Tomba 1. I think I mentioned it last episode.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, so it's out now digitally, and I'm a little worried, right? Because I'm not getting my physical copy till December, because they need to produce it, right? But the actual game is out now digitally, and they've already had to update it because of some like game-breaking bug. And so now I'm wondering, like, okay, is the build on the cartridge going to have like a couple updates in it, or is it not? Because I've heard horror stories that limited run games has bad quality control and their physical copies require patching. And I wish I knew that before I bought it. But like, it's also, it's Tomba, so I was probably going to buy it anyway. They're also working on Gex, and it's like, yeah, I have all of those ROMs like ready to go on the Steam Deck for emulation. But it's like, I want a physical copy, goddammit. Like,
probably will have some problems.
I want to play it when I'm 50 years old in the bunker with my ancient Nintendo Switch, right? Like physical games are all I can bring with me in this theoretical bunker of the future when civilization ends.
One day you can be in the bunker.
Yeah. It's like, to me, that's like the, it's like a promotion, right? It's like, yeah, I have a ton of digital games, and I also have streaming services and digital quote-unquote purchases of movies, but the ones I have physically are the special ones. Those are the ones mm-hmm. that are really mine. The other ones are just leasing them. So
yeah, I mean, that is a big part of the problem, is you are kind of just leasing video games. That's not fun.
Yeah. So I don't really have much of an update on the physical collection. I did manage to score a copy of Minecraft for the Switch, as well as some Monster Truck game my son wanted. But they, the two of them, they really like those two games. And I think my older son is hooked. He's, you know, frequently asks to play it, even though he's got an Xbox in his room. But like the idea that he can be in the living room with Minecraft in hand while I'm doing something on the TV, like, is really appealing to him. And like the other day, I had to go to the doctor for my throat. I don't know if you can tell, but my tonsils are pretty swollen. It's getting better now. I can talk comfortably. But yesterday, when we were supposed to record, I was like, it was like breathing through a straw. Like a
yeah, no, it makes sense.
So basically, we had to take me to the doctor, where the clinic would then, you know, tell me, no idea, go home. That'll be $200. American healthcare. At least it's not Canadian healthcare. They didn't tell me to kill myself.
Yeah, true.
But there's my oldest son, you know, in the car, able to play Minecraft on the Switch. Like, that was fun. And while I was in the waiting room with the two of them, I actually busted the Switch out, pulled out the kickstand, and we were getting ready to queue up Smash Brothers, but we got called in to go back to the room. So I packed it up and handed it to the oldest and was like, all right, we'll be back. Took my youngest, because he's sick too, to the doctor. He's got the same thing I got. They both couldn't help. They couldn't help either of us. What a waste of our time. But whatever.
America.
But I'm getting my money's worth out of that goddamn Switch 7 years later. So that's cool.
Yeah, Nintendo can build a fucking console most of the time.
Yeah, it continues to impress me. Like, I didn't appreciate it as much as I should have until I got the Steam Deck. The only reason I don't pack the Steam Deck around is because it's too valuable. Like, because my current gaming PC that I record this podcast on, like, my graphics card is shot, like, electrically. So I can't quite game the same as before. Like, things just don't work right. My only real option is a full replacement of the computer. And I just don't got the money right now. But everything I was doing, I can do on the Steam Deck or PS5 or both. So it's like, well, my entire Steam collection is available and plays pretty nicely on the Deck. It's almost like, I almost don't want to get a new computer. I kind of want to get a bigger Steam Deck. I don't know. Or, like, get another dock and just make it a computer. Like, I could probably get away with that. Probably shouldn't, though. There's some reasons why you shouldn't do that, but without getting too technical. But I probably could produce this entire show on the Steam Deck.
Probably.
With a dock that supports all my USB attachments? Yeah.
It wouldn't be that difficult, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a while, but yeah.
So Nintendo makes a pretty solid console that lasts the test of time, but it seems like Microsoft just can't.
Microsoft is, yeah, so Vic, you know, death to my Xbox, right?
I guess.
So for those not in the loop,
they're dying, if nothing else.
Xbox 360 is their second console, despite the name. But what's it called? They shut down their live service for the 360, which was like, what'd they call it? Xbox Live Arcade or something like that?
Yeah, I think that's what they were calling it.
And Xbox Live Arcade. So places where you would get games that don't have discs.
Right. Back when that was unusual.
Yes. And they were typically smaller games, too.
Yeah, like, oh my goodness, what year did the 360 even come out? 2006?
Something like that, 2006, 2007.
I think it was like 07 or 08, right?
I just looked it up. It was 05.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, okay. So yeah, I knew it was while I was, like, just barely in high school.
So, back in 2005, it was not normal to have DLC in games at all, or to digitally download games. Xbox Live Arcade was like, some of them are kind of like today's phone games. They're really small.
Yeah, a lot of games. Them were. But, so if people don't know, but they do like know games, especially like zombie games, Xbox Live Arcade did have one game that escaped, in particular called State of Decay. State of Decay 2, right, and that was easily the most successful game that came out for Xbox Live Arcade that I know of. This is entirely just me saying things. I actually don't know if it's the most successful, but it's the only one that's kept going that I know of. Because they did make State of Decay 2, they're making State of Decay 3, because this summer we got a trailer for State of Decay 3, an actual trailer, not a teaser.
And, I think a lot of what's on there, like, I didn't have a 360, but I had a PS3, and much like they do today, back then, Sony was copying Microsoft every turn, and they had these things called PlayStation Minis, which I think they were targeting the PSP Go as the primary console for those, but you could get them on your PS3, and it was the same idea. Tiny digital-only games back when digital-only was weird, and
right.
I suspect, in the case of the Xbox Arcade, a lot of those old games are now lost media.
Probably.
For anyone who couldn't get it off their hard drive, since there was no physical. So, like, that's potentially hundreds, if not thousands, of games that are lost forever.
You had them full downloaded to begin with?
Forever, ever. Yeah.
Well, most of them required online
Oh, you know what? That's a good point. Yeah. I just realized that means 43 is gone now, too?
Oh, yeah. Battlefield 1943 was the most simple, yet possibly the best Battlefield game.
Yep. It was just a repack. Well, it was like a kind of like a slightly dumbed down repackaged version of 42.
Yeah, it was.
It was just good. It was fun to fucking play.
Yeah, they reduced it to 3 classes. Everything was really simple, but also that made it a lot more fucking balanced.
If Battlefield 1943 was so good, where's Battlefield 1944? Wait.
I don't know. That was the year we won.
I know.
Although, unironically, 1942, I think, did have Americans, even though Americans weren't, like, in the war yet as an army. Like, we had a few people kind of mercenarying over there, but not.
Yeah, like, I think they pretty much just made it World War II and called it 42.
I mean, Battlefield 1942 does, like, roll off the tongue. Just straight up.
Yeah. Great marketing, great title, honestly.
But yeah, no, the thing, I realized that's gone now for good.
Well, yeah. I mean, they probably shut down the servers for it years ago.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if the servers are still around, but yeah.
But you know what is still around? Wolfenstein Enemy Territory.
Yes, sir.
And we could totally play that anytime. I got it installed. But then my computer doesn't work very good, so maybe I should.
One of the issues is on newer hardware, it still doesn't really work all that well. I wish it did. I was trying to play it the other night, and there's just weird, like, stuttery bits. It just doesn't like new hardware. There's probably a way to fix that, I'm sure, if I really play around with it, but it's a lot of work for a game that I'm pretty much playing on nostalgia alone.
Yeah. I've been on a Warframe kick lately, so like, I haven't really had time for other games. Like, I still have ZZZ installed since day one on my PlayStation. I still haven't launched it. And that was the case last episode, 2 weeks ago, when we recorded. Like,
yeah.
I mean, that couldn't have changed if you still haven't launched it.
I know. But yeah, like, with me, Warframe comes in, like, it's binging and purging, right? It's like losing, it's like eating. if you're unhealthy. But I play the shit out of it, and then I go on a really long hiatus, wonder if I ever come back at all. And then I come back, and I just play the shit out of it. And I'm currently in the playing the shit out of it phase. And having a blast. Like, I haven't had time for anything else. And it's been, turns out, when you isolate yourself from your online friends for months at a time, it is super unhealthy, turns out. So I've been having a good time reconnecting with everyone in like the Discord. Mm-hmm. I dragged my brother-in-law David with me, kicking and screaming, back into Warframe. He's now meta and capable of high-level content after some coaching. And he loves it now, now that he can do the satisfying big red numbers that make the happy brain chemicals go burr, right? So, so he's hooked. He's playing it without me. Like, I don't need to, like, ask him to get on. He's just playing on his own. And it's good. I've been talking to Sarge more often. He's still not here on the show. You know, he's been good. And me, him, Hydro, others have been playing. And it feels good to, like, talk to people on the internet. Like, I mean, I talk to you guys every 2 weeks. That's one thing, yeah, right? But it's, like, just to jump in Discord and do whatever. Like, I feel younger. Like,
you feel younger.
I'm reconnecting with my gamer roots, man. I was playing too many single player games, I think. Like, I love Stellar Blade, but getting the platinum trophy felt a little bit like a chore. Like, that third playthrough was really, I was really phoning it in for the third playthrough.
Look, I understand that too. I've said that. Like, I think, I said the same thing about AC6, the Armored Core 6, for those who thought I was saying Assassin's Creed there. I felt that about the third playthrough of that one. I was really just holding left click, basically.
Yeah. I didn't feel quite the same about AC6. I like that third playthrough, but I'm also a super fan, so that's okay.
In any game, when you're recycling content to expand the play, you know, play time, it gets old after a while.
That's something that, if you get around to it, you're going to like about Daemon Ex Machina, is that it's a one-shot campaign. It's just long.
I have heard from several people that that game, in many ways, still does things that Armored Core 6 didn't pull off.
Yeah, and it's weird that there's so many FromSoft fans that, or Armored Core fans specifically, that just didn't give it a chance. And it's like, bro, where have you been? Like, it was there for us when AC6 wasn't. Like, it was a meme. We didn't think it would ever be announced. We thought it was done, right? And here comes DXM being everything we wanted in AC6. And, like, you still can't get out of the suit. Or you can't get out of your mech in AC6. You can in Daemon Ex Machina. You can walk around your garage. You can jump and flip. You can shoot things as your mech pilot, right? And there's, like, co-op bosses. And there's an end game procedurally generated dungeon that you can do. Like, there's a bunch of shit, right? That Daemon Ex Machina does really well. And I'm probably going to replay it soon. I'll be replaying the Switch version because Destiny was interested in watching it. But we'll see what the order is. Right now, I think the next game I want Destiny to play, because we do this thing where she watches me play games, right? She wants to see Kingdom Hearts, but I told her, you have to play it. It's not the same. You can't just watch Kingdom Hearts. You have to play
it. Yeah.
You have to play it because it requires active listening in a way that other games don't necessarily, and it's hard to necessarily active listen to games if you're not playing them.
I'll also say that if she even remotely cares about learning the story, getting it secondhand is not going to do it.
Yeah, and she's watching Disney movies, so it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
But right now, the time she has available to play games, she and I, at the same time, are playing Warframe. So
yeah, fair.
It's like, this is how we want to spend our game time right now.
Yeah, no, it's all good. Also, Kingdom Hearts is a commitment if you really are wanting to get the story, because you can't just play, you know, the mainline games.
Yeah, like, she's going to be real confused by the time we get to 3 if we don't do any of the other ones. Like, you can go from 1 to 2, that's fine. But
because I don't actually think at the time they produced games between 1 and 2.
There's one game between, it's the Game Boy Advance one.
But it came out after.
Yeah.
Did it? I think they came out about the same time, actually.
Fundamentally, it adds context. It isn't necessary, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's probably the least necessary of all the games, honestly.
It's not like 2.6 or 2.4, whatever they called that game.
They have some funny titles, dear listener. If you don't know what the fuck we're talking about, you gotta look it up, because I don't even know what they called that.
To be fair, some of them only look really weird to us in the West, because what they were is they. If you guys remember how old games used to do expansion packs, they just resell the game. That's what a lot of those were. Like 2.5, for instance, was just 2, but with the expansion pack attached.
Yeah, but they didn't call it 2.5. That's why I was making fun of it, because they literally call it like 2.4 or 2.6.
Yeah, they got some weird titles going, for, but...
Like, I'm just making fun of their title structure.
Nothing that reminds me of when Square Enix remade Nier Replicant. Like, the remake name was, like, Nier Replicant version, like, 1.27 something something. It was, like, 8-10 numbers, right? It's actually the square root of 2. So 1 plus the square root of 2. Because it's, like, it's not quite 2, but it's not quite 1. It's in the middle. But instead of doing 1.5, it's, like, this is a little smaller. Like,
yeah.
So they pulled up the fucking square root. Like, come on.
Hey, yeah. At least they had a method to their madness, as mad as it really was.
And people will still be like, "What do you mean, Nier 3? You meant Replicant, right?" Like, no, like reincarnation. But anyway, enough about that.
Yeah, let's talk about more news, I guess. What news do we want to hit up next? Because we got a couple.
So we were just talking about Xboxes. So let's talk about the layoff news.
Bungie does Bungie still have people working there anymore?
I'm not certain. So like how many jobs have they lost this year? Like 1,000? Like
something like that, cuz like this wave was like what? 200?
220. So
okay.
It's not just 220. 220 people were laid off. And like I think it was 170 people were moved to Sony Interactive Entertainment, and a couple others were moved to like some other Bungie project within Bungie. But like the context being, Destiny 2 had its last expansion. They're not making any more. It's basically the death of the game. And it's weird because the expansion was really well received. Everyone seemed to like it. But they're basically stopping the game.
I mean, but they did announce it as the final expansion, right? Like, so...
Yeah.
They announced it as the final expansion. It would be kind of weird if they decided not to. But, you know, you'd think Destiny 3 would be at least announced by now, because why would they let Destiny die?
Yeah, I don't get it. Like, I know they're still working on Extraction Shooter Marathon, and I have very low expectations of that one.
Yeah, why do they gotta kill my favorite? Well, actually, not my favorite. It is on my favorites list, but I don't know. Like, Marathon gets a lot of gets forgotten in that Doom clone era, when all shooters were Doom clones. But like, it set the bar for a lot of things. Like, it was the first FPS, maybe the first first-person game to use mouse look at all.
Did you ever try any of the? I think it's Saber Interactive. They started releasing the remakes, remasters, I guess, of the originals.
Well, I had already played them because I have Aleph 1 installed, so I didn't really need to download them on Steam to play them again.
Fair.
Marathon does not get better on subsequent playthroughs, in my opinion. Because it's very story-driven, and if you know the story, you lose a part of what makes it special, if you know in advance, I think.
I guess that's fair. But the discourse online about the Bungie layoffs has been kind of funny, because the CEO, whose name I've already forgotten, I'll
look it up while you do that.
Thanks. He apparently he privated his Twitter account because of all the backlash. But I guess recently he bought a bunch of classic cars for a shitload of money. So like,
yeah, it was like $2.3 million. Yeah, sorry. Pete Parsons spent $2.3 million on cards before laying off 220 devs. That's the Young Ya title.
Oh dang! It's already gone. But there was a previous version of the on the Destiny wiki of Pete Parsons where it was like they vandalized it. They're like, also known as Piss Parsons, and they.
I mean,
what a dick! Buying a bunch of expensive fucking cars the day before you like lay off your entire studio after a successful expansion of your like 10-year-old game, like.
Right, because that's really what it is like, he spent a shit ton of money, and it's like, sorry guys, we can't afford you, but like, $2.3 million is a lot, and they're actively working on projects, so these guys should have jobs still.
Yeah.
Like, and I get moving a few around, or maybe some of them, like, because if there are people that are exclusive to Destiny and really don't have a skill set outside of working on Destiny, and you're not planning on Destiny 3 anytime soon for some stupid reason... I get that then. But that can't be more than, what, 30 people?
It's like, the dude was like, I have $2.2 million. Should I use it to fix my money printing machine or buy cars? Forget the money printing machine. Let's buy cars. Oh no, my money printing machine broke. What a fucking idiot.
Well, yeah, I know. Then, you know, what's going to happen is, you know, a year or two down the road, he's going to get his fucking golden parachute when he leaves this company to go join another as a CEO there.
Maybe he'll join Firewalk and manage Concord into the ground too, since it's got a bunch of former devs from Bungie.
That's a good point. You know, speaking of people who formerly worked elsewhere, maybe he could go be the new, financial officer for Second Wind.
Yeah, he could. I hear they have an opening.
Yeah. It's fresh, like, today.
Yeah, well, so we've sung the praises of Second Wind on this show. I really like what they stand for. And I think Nick, so far, has done a good job. But apparently, there is drama in the house.
Yeah. So I'm going to pull from the actual Second Wind post on YouTube, because
I got the other ones ready.
Yeah. Let's start there. The reason I'm going to pull from this one first is because this is set in much more neutral language, because the other ones are set in fuck these guys language. So a day ago now, I guess.
Actually, before you do that one, let's start with the first post in the saga, which is also by them, but on Twitter.
Right.
I got that one ready. I got a picture.
Start with that one. Yeah.
So August 1st, in the year of our Lord, 2024, the Second Wind Group Twitter account says, "We're sorry that the other Frost," you'll hear his name soon, "has chosen to resign from Second Wind. He was a valued member of the team and will be greatly missed. We hope he will continue to make great content such as Cold Take for his own channels. As a member of a co-op, he was always free to leave if he felt his goals did not align with the rest of the team, and we all wish him the best in his future endeavors."
Now, I do have something to say about this full stop, because they took Cold Take with them from the Escapist, because that was Frost's property. However, with that right there, that tells me that they're saying in no uncertain terms, Cold Take is ours, Frost.
Are you sure?
Because that's what it sounds like to me. Like, straight up, we hope he will make more content like Cold Take.
No, he said, they said such as.
Such as?
They said such as, implying that he still owns it.
Okay. Oh, such as Cold Take for his own channels.
Yes.
Okay, well, maybe he keeps Cold Take.
He will. He later confirmed on Twitter that he will.
Okay, that's good then, that's good.
Because, yeah, when I first read that, I was like, oh, they're saying, no, Cold Take's ours. But that's good. Because, Frost, although in fairness, I'm not as, like, when he's had his own creative direction on Cold Take without the Escapist oversight, I did find some of his topics were not as good.
I've never watched Cold Take, actually.
Cold Take is done in a very, like, 1950s private eye style. Very, very good at that. It's very, like, let's look at why things are the way they are. And it's still opinionated, of course, but it's like opinion based in fact, because there's always some speculation because you can't look at every piece of evidence ever made. That's just not feasible. So, Second Wind, they've lost him in response to them letting go of their head of sales. Who I hadn't heard the name of, I had heard the name of, because they refer to him as CK, and so I've seen CK on the channel, but I didn't know him as Cisco. Cisco was their head of sales, so their YouTube post. "This morning, we let go of our head of sales, Cisco, as we had differing expectations for the job and the future direction of the company. During the meeting, we discussed this with staff. Frost made the decision to resign, which came as a surprise to all of us, and he has made his post declaring how he felt about the situation at large." And so basically, they're saying a lot of mollifying language. This is a much larger post, so I'm not going to read the whole thing. But yeah, basically, they're just saying, you know, sorry things didn't work out with Frost and Cisco. I don't know, because that's Nick in the Second Wind team, according to this. Frost post is very enlightening. Cisco's post is kind of whatever, in my opinion.
Well, Cisco's post is, quote, retweeting Frost's post. I think Frost's post came first.
Yeah, so let's talk about Frost.
I'll read this one. This one's a fun one. So, Frost posted on Twitter, "I have resigned from Second Wind Group. I'll say more later, but I want people to know where their money and support is going." And then he posted a picture, because he doesn't pay for Twitter Blue, of a bigger message. And I will read it verbatim, because it is spicy.
Yeah.
"When I joined Second Wind Group, I was under the assumption that we were forming a team of creatives with equal value and equal say. Individual creators would oversee their personal series, and the group would decide how to run the business together. It was plain as day that we have recreated the toxic corporate environment that we had abandoned, led by a petulant wannabe CEO who overspends, overpromises, underdelivers, sows division, tarnishes our image, asserts his creative vision, or rather, creative blindness, and sabotages anyone's attempts to correct him, all while he fails his most basic duties, joyrides around the world, clout farms, and expects the community and Yahtzee to foot the bill because Nick Calandra tanks our YouTube revenue and makes us undesirable for sponsors. It is beyond incompetence. Nick Calandra operates in bad faith to serve his ego, and this group lacks attitude and the process to appropriately deal with inaction and inability to deliver the core capabilities of our roles. The board of directors lacks a knowledgeable enough majority to see through even the most basic Google searchable errors in Nick's foracial? Is that a word? Foracial directions?
I mean,
not what I'm familiar with.
Frost has a very deep vocabulary.
Yes.
He really does. I enjoy you reading this, because Frost's voice is wildly different.
I don't even know what he sounds like.
Oh man,
I'm only halfway through it. It's long.
Yeah.
Well, I will say what little we've heard so far. It sounds like a mix between Growing Pains and him being mad about Twitter drama.
So it's farcical directions.
Oh, farcical. What's farcical mean?
Like farce, but
yeah,
actively happening.
Are you sure it's not fartsicle?
I mean, fartsicle is good enough.
Close enough.
Fartsicle would be a good episode title.
We will throw that in the episode title bucket, and maybe it'll come out.
Maybe. That's kind of childish. We're trying to talk about something serious. Let me read the rest of this. So, Google searchable errors in Nick's fartsicle directions to use as their personal feelings as a substitute for information when presented with dumbed down versions at the repeated request. The rest of the owners have little knowledge on what's going on, and I don't fault them, because the whole point of the culture of isolation. There isn't enough leads at once thinking that there's a problem. The rest don't know of the problems, and therefore there are no problems. All of my personal attempts to make Nick see reason are ignored, and all of my attempts to make the leads aware of Nick's behavior are brushed off with minimal action. All of my attempts to raise concern for our systemic issues with leads are put off until after problems occur. I refuse to be subjected to this behavior any longer, and I believe I have done everything in my power to address the issues for over 6 months, and I want no part in preying on the community's goodwill and Yahtzee's hard work simply because we can't run a business. At this rate, we don't deserve to run a business. Consider this my formal resignation effective immediately." What a zinger. I love a good resignation. Like, damn, dude. Like, I have a couple ideas. Like, I wonder if this is continued fallout for Nick appearing on Side Scrollers Pod.
I don't think it's side-scroller specifically. I think this is
the entire Twitter saga that led him there.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
Because if you recall our coverage of Nick going on Side Scrollers, there are people like Alyssa Mercante from Kotaku, and people like with her and her friends who were basically calling Nick out for this and saying he's being chummy with, you know, the homophobic people, like, what's her face?
Oh, yeah.
Melanie Mack.
Melanie Mack, yeah.
Who he didn't even know was on the show and going to be there when he joined, right?
I mean, it doesn't matter. Like, if you can't, like, we discussed it at length last time. If you're the one saying we can't talk to people, then you're the wrong.
Right.
You're in the wrong.
And they made it sound like because he went on that show, they're suddenly best friends or something. And it's like, yeah, sure, they said that, but don't you think they might have done more? Like, if I was a malicious person working for Kotaku, right, I could totally see myself being compelled by management or doing because I wanted to, going after the advertisers for Second Wind and trying to paint a picture that their editor-in-chief, Nick Calandra, might be a bad dude, right? And that you shouldn't advertise with these people.
I wonder if Mercante has that kind of pull with advertisers, though.
Probably not.
Probably doesn't, but she might have friends that do, right?
Yeah, I suppose it's actually probably easier to say that she probably has some for someone or somewhere, but not, like, anything wide-reaching, I wouldn't bet.
But they weren't really relying on ads in the first place. Like, they always push the Patreon because they don't want to censor Yahtzee swearing, right? So they already weren't very advertiser-friendly, right? But it might impact their ability to get brand deals.
Show up at conventions.
Yeah, which might be more what Frost is talking about here, right?
Well, maybe. So this is one thing that I'm willing to wait until more spills out, because more will spill out. Like, undoubtedly, Frost and Cisco are not going to be the only two who leave.
Yeah.
I don't know if Yahtzee is going to. I don't think he will, honestly, because he desperately he doesn't desperately need it, but, like, there's a lot of back-end stuff that if Yahtzee would prefer not to take care of, because he doesn't just do videos. He recently released a his own post-ad simulator, Starstruck Vagabond, you're a space trucker. He did an update for that, so it's like that's just full of quality of life shit, but that required him to go back and do more stuff on that game. So he does game developing, simple games, but still he writes novels that he releases at least every couple years. So that's a lot of writing, and he writes the episodes too. Like that's not just, you know, unfiltered scriptless. Like he writes a script for his Fully Rambolic, formerly Zero Punctuation. And then he, you know, probably practices it to some degree before it even hits the camera. Or he does clever editing to make it. But he said that it doesn't really require him to do clever editing. He's gotten really good at doing it over the past, like, 15 years.
Right. And the other thing that bothers me, right, is that everyone that jumped ship with Nick Calandra, right, when he got fired from The Escapist, owned by Gamers with a U, right? They all described Gamers as this, like, evil conglomerate megacorp that just buys up gaming publications and runs them into the ground with, like, awful corporate structure and culture, right? And it's like, okay, so they went from that to an employee-owned co-op, which is, like, for, you know, the Californians in the audience, that's, like, the dream, right? Or whatever, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, employee-owned co-op.
Right.
Everybody gets a split of the take.
So what people who don't know is that that is actually not the dream, and that an employee-owned co-op means you don't make minimum wage.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. Like, any co-op I've seen in real life has been terrible.
Yeah, it's only a co-op because you can't afford to pay a single employee a wage.
Yeah.
But the idea that it's a co-op completely, that is somewhat profitable, like, they say their financials are open, and they are. Like, you can go look at how much they make from Patreon and other sources, and you know how many people work there. You can divide the number and see how it goes, but, like, I don't really know what they're spending it on. I don't know how. I haven't really looked very deeply at it, right? But it's like, are they even making minimum wage? I don't know. And, but, like, a co-op authoritatively, like, sounds like a way better deal than Gamers. But this dude got filtered within 6 months. Like, how bad is it inside? Is the pay just not good enough to put up with what he's seeing? Or is Frost the kind of guy that would, like, foam at the mouth at the idea of Nick Calandra standing up to those people on Side Scrollers? Is he that kind of guy? I have no idea who this person is, right? Like, except that he makes a show on their channel, and the people that pay them the Patreon dollars every month, right? Like, half of what they're paying for is now gone. I don't know how their patrons must feel about that. Will they adjust their donations? Will they demand more? I don't know. They might.
Frost literally is half of what they were paying for. Frost's Cold Take became the only other profitable show on Escapist, and they brought that with them. So, yes. No, you're absolutely right. Half of what people are paying for is just gone. They're probably, like, they've been leaning super hard on Yahtzee as well. Yahtzee, who just had a baby, by the way. Well, not him himself. His wife had the baby, but you know what I mean.
An immaculate conception.
Hey, I wasn't going to judge.
But yeah, so he had a baby recently. Also, some of what Frost is saying here with him, like being, overspends over promises or whatever. I believe he also said something about the man oversleeping somewhere at some point in time, too, like for meetings and shit. But whatever. My point being is, Nick has been on the channel less and less, visually.
Right, and also, Frost is that dude who was the one that made that quote everyone liked to see, saying, you know, I'm going to take a chance on the guy who took a chance on me, right? When that was like one of the big quotes we would see when people were trying to explain like who this Nick guy was and why everyone at the Escapist was willing to follow him when he got fired, right?
Yeah.
It's like, wow. This guy must mean business, right?
Well, and yeah, and I also said something when we were talking about this. And I say, who knew that a bunch of, bloggers didn't know how to run a business?
Yeah.
Like, essentially, they don't know how to run a business. And it's not, like, Frost is not wrong about that. And what I've seen of Frost is, well, I do think he is nice to video game journalists and such. He tends to be more realistic. I don't want to call him a fence sitter, but he is somebody who tries to see both sides of an argument and come to a conclusion based off of what reality looks like.
Yeah, he's a fan of nuance.
Right, he's not as harsh on video game critics as, say, we are. Because, he's on that side too, where he can say, they're doing a lot of work. The person who would be best to play, say, Elden Ring, isn't given Elden Ring to review for the company. But at the same token, like, IGN exists. And yeah. Their reviews are middling, to say the least, like, the quality of them.
And there's been a lot of evidence over the years of them potentially being paid. Or at least, if not paid, heavily incentivized.
Yeah, and there's like this Asian tax with IGN. Like, they gave The First Descendant a 5 out of 10. They hated it that much. I'm pretty sure it was just because they're Korean, right? Or whatever. They're from Nexon.
I bet you I can call it right now. Nexon is a shit company. They've done some shit things, and they fucked over their employees and their consumers for, what, like 20 plus years now? I don't even know. For a long fucking time. So there's probably some bad blood there. And instead of just reviewing the game, they reviewed the company and said it was the game. That's right. My guess.
Now, they could have reviewed the company and not just reviewed the game. Remember, we did have that Xbox review where they just bitched about Donald Trump after the second paragraph.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, what does Donald Trump have to do with Nexon?
That's another episode title. What does Donald Trump have to do with Nexon?
I'm going to write that down. That's actually a good one. So, like, with The First Descendant, I think the funniest part about IGN's review is that I scroll down, right? Mm-hmm. And I see First Descendant news, and it's just a bunch of IGN articles from, like, one day ago, 2 days ago, 2 days ago, nine days ago. They're covering new character trailers and little mini updates to the game because it's really popular.
Of course. They gave it a shit review. Actually, now that you've said that they've given it a 5 out of 10, that's flying in the face of their little IGN review score video they did of, like, 8 months ago now, whatever it was. Like, I think it was sometime last year, right? Like, when they did that, breakdown of how they do reviews.
Yeah.
Because by virtue of that, it should at least be a 7.
Right. But a 5? Like,
a 5 is, like, it looks like shit, it plays like shit, but it's
on the
not
IGN scale anyways, yeah.
There are serious problems with the game, and I do think there are some serious problems with First Descendant.
It's more pay to win, more frame, is the way I look at it.
And I was going to say, that is my serious problem with it more than anything else, is that the monetization is like a throwback to 2015, 2016.
Right, and it's like, I think I saw a clip from, I think it was Asmongold the other day, or earlier today, where he was actually, like, super thrilled hearing a bunch of content creators cover The First Descendant, and they kept, comparing it to Destiny and Warframe as though, those two games are better, but this is, like, not bad, right? And mm-hmm. he was like, that excites me because I've never played either of those. And it makes him want to play those now because he has played First Ascended and he actually liked it. And it's like, everyone who talks about it says these other two games are like the frame of reference and they're supposedly better and more historied. And it's like, well, maybe I should fucking try that.
Honestly, yeah. Well, you know, I've made some comments about Destiny 2's monetization being real shit.
Oh, yeah, don't like, actually play Destiny 2 like that. Like,
I mean, you can.
It's probably the better game, but
you're gonna be lost. I'll just be real. The game has it's neutered itself, gutted itself on purpose, and I don't know why. I don't know what that purpose was, but there yeah. apparently was one.
And you're not talking systems. You're talking like story important quests have literally been removed.
Well, systems, story, apparently like a lot of shit. But I mean, I guess to be fair, most live service games do eventually gut their systems, but like
Warframe didn't.
They cut a fuck ton. Well, you're right. Warframe hasn't. That's a good point.
Warframe has wildly changed a lot of systems. Make no mistake.
But the idea is still there. Effectively.
Yes. Yeah. Something IGN seems to do in the most recent iteration of their website is so this article was written by Travis Northup at IGN, mm-hmm. right? And like halfway down the article, there's like a little box here, like it's like a pop-up ad, right? And it's mm-hmm. like it's that Travis guy, Ty Guy Travis is his username, I guess, for IGN, right? And he has a list of his favorite free-to-play games, and you can click on him and see their IGN pages. And he's ranked his favorite free games. So, like, one of the things he bitches about is the monetization versus this, which we know isn't great, right? It's definitely not as good as Warframe.
I mean, it has a battle pass and loot yeah. box. Like, it's like the battle pass and loot box, you know, combo.
So I already accept that it's not as good as that, right? And that's probably fair criticism. But do you know what his number one free-to-play game is on his list? I want you to take a guess, actually.
I'm going to throw out a wild one. Is it Genshin?
It is, actually.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was the only one that was coming to mind, but I didn't want to say it because I was like, man, it can't be Genshin.
It's Genshin Impact. I'm like, what is bro smoking? That is way worse.
I was going to say, like, the only reason why I would ever rank something like, I don't know, let's say a gacha game above other games in its, because even though you could argue it's pay to win, it's still single player and you really don't need to. That's the only argument I could ever see being made. Although at the end of the day, they are still predatory, very egregious games. So I don't know if I would say that personally, but
yeah. And like Warframe did make his list of favorite free to play games, but like ahead of it is Genshin, Elder Scrolls Online, Call of Duty.
Elder Scrolls Online, I could see on the list because it is a legitimately good game.
Right. But like Call of Duty, that's loot box hell. Like, Honkai Star Rail, fair, I guess. They actually give out 5 stars and Genshin doesn't. Halo Infinite? People play that?
Yeah.
Halo Infinite, I wouldn't even call it free to play. The only part of it that's free to play is the multiplayer. You know, the part where you're like, ooh boy, let me get that little piece of armor bit.
Yeah.
I actually, funny enough, a side tangent real quick. Halo has been both on fire and active again lately.
Oh, in what ways?
Twitter has this cool shitty feature. I'm just going to call it what it is. It's garbage. Where if you even so much as fucking interact or look at a post for too long about a subject matter, it gets added to your list of things you're interested in. And you have And you have to look through a list of like literal hundreds of fucking thousands of things if you don't know that this is a thing before it implements itself. It's fucking garbage. But big butts here. Because I interacted with a Moist Critical post about him saying that Sprint killed Halo, which I believe didn't necessarily kill Halo, but it definitely did not help. It hurt it. It hurt Halo a lot, at least back in the day. And Infinite is just a link in the chain of a game that was ruined once upon a time, effectively, right? Mm-hmm. So I interacted with that, and now I get fucking every somewhat big post or some guy who pays $8 a month, I get all of it. And the community hates itself. They hate each other, dude. They do not like each other. And Infinite sucks. Fuck you. Infinite's the greatest. You find out Infinite's his first Halo game. Oh, that makes sense. It's like, it's fucking everywhere, and I can't avoid it. I've even tried telling Twitter to fuck off. I don't want it. And they're like, nah, brother, you're getting it. Come on, man. I don't even play Halo anymore.
Show me on the doll where Twitter touched you.
Or sprinting hurt you.
Well, my feet, for one.
Well, actually, you know, fun thing, though. Somebody has been working on a project to do, like, Unreal Halo. Like, I would say, yeah.
Unreal Engine Halo?
Yeah. Yeah, Halo. They've started doing a reel for it. It looks really cool. But we don't, you know, it's barely a thing so far.
Yeah, at current, I think they're mostly producing it as, like, a tech demo to show what could be. But, yeah.
Well, sort of. Like, they've already gone so far to put, like, the Flood in it. So, you know, it's definitely going. And they're doing a lot with it. I think the idea is that you're going to be playing, that they're going to be making kind of a horror game out of it. Like, yeah, no, it, I don't know. It looks good. I don't know when, if ever, it'll be released. But yeah, so people are fans are trying to keep Halo alive.
Yeah. But I guess a long and short there is, I think Infinite is actually having a somewhat normal player base at this point.
I mean, it's just probably. That
I think for the most part, it's not like people from the larger audience. It's people who probably started with Infinite. And I don't, you know what? Infinite in a vacuum maybe isn't even that bad of a game. But it's one of those ones where, like, how many people have dropped Call of Duty over the years because it's not the same as Modern Warfare 1 and 2? Or World of War even. Plenty. I don't play Call of Duty anymore. It's not what I wanted to play anymore. Doesn't mean it can't be a good game. It's just that the larger audience that they once hit no longer wants to play.
I mean, it's still a wildly successful game. Just, you know,
that too. I mean, it still is. It's just different audience. Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm sure that the guy who makes knifing content is still.
Oh, maybe.
Is it the Ghost of Calrada or whatever his name was?
I remember I had TikTok installed a while back. I don't have it currently because it's really distracting and it's bad for my health. Mm-hmm. But his videos are really entertaining.
Yeah, no, he does a great job. Man, I hate seeing things that I love get destroyed. You know, between, you know, Escapist, then to Second Wind, now to, you know, Halo, things like that. Like, because these are things that I really, you know, liked a long time. I watched the Escapist, you know, Yahtzee on the Escapist when he was the only thing on the Escapist.
Yeah.
I think Yahtzee's safe. He's probably set for life, honestly. His content's so good.
Yeah, honestly, he could stop doing zero punctuation. Oh, sorry, fully rambolic. Ramblematic, fully Ramblematic, and the other stuff he does for Second Wind. He could leave Second Wind tomorrow and be fine.
But Second Wind would not be fine.
Oh, no. Like, they need his. Yahtzee produces the most content for that channel.
Yeah.
Like, he has, like, two Yahtzee shows, and he also streams, and then he has, like, a bi-weekly show, I think, where Yahtzee Tries is one, too. Like, there kind of is just him trying out a bunch of different, like, little games on the weekend or something for, like, an hour each.
So, I don't have anything prepared today, but I think we, the Bellmats Podcast, could probably do something to dispel some of the doom and gloom when it comes to our favorite hobby of video games. I want to challenge the two of you this time, 2 weeks' time, next episode, episode 93, to just find a bunch of good stories. Like,
I mean,
they're out there. They are out there. Like, I haven't played First Ascendant yet, but I like that genre, and I like that the studio is doing well, right? And they have, like, a consistent 100,000 players on Steam. I can't find them in the Steam charts, but I've seen a screenshot where they hit those numbers pretty consistent. And that's cool. And I saw an article somewhere where Nexon reports, you know, record profits, even though their monetization model could be better, right? I mean, I'll continue to criticize them for that, but the games looks fun. The people playing it say it's fun. I suspect they haven't played Warframe before, but that's okay.
Yeah, the gameplay is much, much less Warframe, having seen it.
Yeah.
Like, Warframe is way more fast-paced and has way more options in all category.
But, like, at the same time, Warframe is very healthy. You can look at their Steam chart. You zoom out for a few months, you see a pretty regular, like, stair pattern, right?
Mm-hmm.
It may not be, like, necessarily growing, but it is still going strong. And the new update was a banger. Next month, or actually this month, it's August 1st, or it's August 2nd right now. This month, we're expecting another big update with a new quest and some new shit. And I am locked in, totally ready for that. But like, yeah, next time let's come prepared with some like feel good stories about like shit that's actually good, because like it's fucking out there, right? And I don't like just like singing the doom and gloom of like all these poor studios, because there's so much doom and gloom. Like, if you look for it, you'll find it. It's very abundant.
You don't have to look for it. That's the number one thing that gets the clicks. That's what we get more of. I mean, that's the system we've built, taking advantage of our brains.
But, you know, thanks to, you know, things like Value for Value and Podcasting 2.0, it's like, well, I don't need to scare people or anger them to find more audience.
I think for the most part, whenever we do, it's not because of that. It's just because we genuinely, it is doom and gloom for some of us sometimes.
Yeah. Right.
But yeah.
Okay. So I'm waiting for games to come out before I really want to talk to them, but I'm hopeful for several games, one of which being Kingmakers. I was talking about earlier with somebody else. That game, it looks like it's going to be at least a lot of fun for the power fantasy of being able to mow down a bunch of knights and shit with machine guns and maybe drive a truck through battle lines and shit. That's the...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah. I mean, it's on your wish list.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, hey, look, if I can bring a grenade launcher to fight my medieval wars with me, you know, kind of like for those older folks in the crowd, it's like a much better, more refined, and more Mountain Blade version of Darkest Days, I believe was the name of the game, where it was a time travel game back in 7th gen.
And when I was watching the trailer for the game that you're talking about, like, I just remember, like, oh yeah, it does kind of look like Mountain Blade, and then, like, now they're driving a semi, or a pickup truck through the crowd. It's like, what the fuck is happening?
It's like, yeah, Darkest of Days was the game that I was thinking of. The Mandalor just did a review on it, because it's an awful game. Well, it's an okay game for what it was.
Not every game that Mandalor reviews is bad. They are special.
Yeah, but there are some other, you know, games that are, you know, I'm looking forward to. There's some horror co-op shooter and extraction shooter market is growing. Most extraction shooters have a degree of horror built in, just because, you know, you might see people.
Yeah.
People are scary.
It's inherently stressful.
Yes. But yeah, though, there's an SCP like SWAT style game coming out. Soon, I guess. Soon.tm. Yeah.
I actually might try Level Zero now I'm thinking about it.
Yeah,
I hope some of the guys will play it, but...
If it runs on the Steam Deck, I'll be there.
Level Zero, I don't know if I've heard of that one.
It's another extraction shooter. It's, basically, the TLDR is you are three-man groups going into a alien-infested region to get loot and kill other players, but while there's NPC aliens, your quote-unquote scav mode is you also play as an alien. And you're trying to evolve yourself by killing other players and collecting loot around the map. And you get to sell those evolution points for shit later on.
That's actually really cool.
Yeah, so it's an asymmetrical extraction shooter, basically.
That reminds me of a free open source title. Or also Evolve, but it reminds me of this other game called Tremulous, which was a free software game that floated around the Linux communities back in the early 2010s. Like, that game was cool.
I'm looking at the Steam page, and I do like the idea of it, because also, I like the idea of that when you're playing the alien, that means you're not looting guys, too, so if it's a bad fight for you, maybe you just don't do it.
Yeah.
Instead of being like, I'm a scav, if I die, I fucking die.
So, one more point about Warframe, I almost fucking forgot. So, another exciting thing was between the recording of this episode and our last episode, TennoCon happened, right? That fucking happened. I'll leave you with this before we wrap the show, right? So every year, Digital Extremes does a convention over in London, Ontario, Canada, where they basically have like a big 8-hour live stream with a bunch of panels, right? And one of them is this like 45-minute to an hour-long main event of sorts, right? Where they show a trailer for the next big thing for the game, which they've fumbled this before. Not the presentation, but, like, they've fumbled, like, hey, look at this trailer for the new thing, and then it takes fucking 2 years to get here. Like, that's some bullshit. They've done that, right? But, you know, they've changed leadership since then, and things are really good with Warframe, so everyone's pretty confident it's going to come out when they say, and they also have reaffirmed their commitment to only showing stuff that's coming soon, not too far out, right? That's worked really well for them. So what they showed this year was basically a follow-up on something they teased last year. So, like, last year they teased at something but also showed stuff that did come out. But the thing that they teased was Warframe 1999, which is, like, a thing. It's part of the game. And now we know a lot more about what the fuck that is. We know a shitload more about what that is, and it's coming out in the winter. So Warframe 1999 is basically a new story quest where, so you guys aren't caught up with Warframe, so I don't even know where to begin to explain this to you.
I have a slight understanding of what 1999 is, because that just told me.
Yeah, so basically, by the time you guys quit playing, there was a bunch of story threads open, and most of those have been closed and resolved, right? Yeah. And we have, like, new shit to worry about in the plot. We're basically in a second arc of the story, right? And the second arc of the story centers around this one dude who discovered the void in the first place, because he kind of caused all of our problems, right? And he, apparently, is hiding in 1999, thanks to time travel shenanigans. And what we believe was revealed to us, I mean, they aren't telling us everything, obviously, right? But what they told us was this guy's there, and there's a collection of characters they basically are an open world zone syndicate called the Hex. And it is that one dude went back in the past with the Helminth infested strain, and he made them into Warframes, but, like, they're not fully Warframes. Like, that's why their heads are exposed and they only have their bodies turned and they look a little different, right? But, like, he brought that shit from the future to the past, and that they're not the first, like, that Excalibur voiced by Ben Starr, that's not the first Excalibur. We met that guy in the Sacrifice quest, right? We already know who the first Excalibur was, right?
Yeah.
So, like, this is a new dude, because of time travel shenanigans, has been turned into what looks like Excalibur. And there's one for Mag, there's one for Trinity, there's one for Volt, there's one for Nyx, who is the sister of the Excalibur character, which is funny because Nyx looks just like Excalibur because they were originally going to be custom Warframes. They weren't originally going to be characters back in the early beta, right? They obviously went back on that, but then they brought it back here by making them siblings, which was kind of cool to see. And what they revealed was it's basically a new zone with a story, just like the labs were in the last Tenocon update. The last Tenocon update basically told us there were going to be two new zones where there's a bunch of missions there and a new syndicate, and there's going to be a bunch of shit to do. And that's still the content people play the most because it's the most rewarding and it's the most high level, right?
Yeah.
And so this is just going to be yet another new zone with a story that makes sense. In this new zone, it's like the past. You can play as these frames. Don't really know what the story is going to be about yet, but they're looking for that scientist guy. They also revealed that there is going to be dating sim elements.
Oh.
Okay. All right, time to... Hey, look. Nyx has always... Well, not always. Sorry. They've leveled up some other frames, but Nyx was always the waifu Warframe for a long time. She's the OG waifu Warframe. So now you can make her your waifu for real.
That's right. And it's a relationship between any of these characters and your Drifter, right? So you're not doing matchmaker for Ben Starr's character. You could date Ben Starr if you're inclined.
I mean, a lot of people are going to be so inclined. What are you talking about? Ben Starr. Yes.
Bro, I get to kiss Ben Starr?
They alluded to a 1999 New Year's Eve kiss, I guess. I don't know. Let's go, fucking goon frame. Love it.
Yeah. Okay. So.
One more thing.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about Warframe real quick, because I have got you a happy thing that has happened.
Hold that thought. There is another thing they revealed at the end. So there's this system in Warframe called the Nemesis system. It's based on Lord of the Rings, Shadow of Mordor, right? Where
they can legally do it, though, because they can't actually use the real Nemesis system. That is copyright.
But, like, it's basically the same thing, and Warframe's still around. I don't think people still talk about Shadow of War or whatever. So it's like, at some point, people are going to remember this from Warframe and not the Lord of the Rings game from 10 years ago, right? but they have this nemesis system. It started with Grenier only, so they're called the Liches. So since they were the first, people often refer to this as the Lich hunting system, right? And the reward that you get is you can either capture them and make them part of your Railjack crew, or you can kill them and take their weapon, which is some of the best weapons in the game. Right, you can level them up to 40 instead of 30, and their stats are absolutely cracked and sort of randomly generated, right? And then some years later, a corpus version of this system was added called the Sisters of Parvos, because there was a story quest where the leader of the corpus wasn't missing. He was actually locked up in the void somewhere. He is now free, and it's a cult, and they worship him, so it gets real culty real fast, right? And the Sisters of Parvos are the liches for the corpus, right? And now we have infested liches.
Nice.
So the sisters were this weird culty thing. The liches for the Grenier were like these larva things that turn into Grenier that can't die. What would you like to take some guesses at how they're doing the infested one?
Warframes?
It's a good guess. What about you, Vic?
I'm not sure.
Would you believe me if I told you that they are members of a boy band from the 90s?
Oh. NSYNC is here? Or yes. Backstreet Boys? Okay. It was one or the other.
They're called Online. They have a hit single on Spotify. They actually released it like it's a fucking band, just like they did for Samurai and Cyberpunk 2077. So the members of this band, I guess, turned into the infested, and the gameplay they showed was like the player characters in their Railjack. And the cephalon for the Railjack is like, infested music detected. We need to deal with this. And it's like, it's playing their fucking song on these giant boomboxes on asteroids, and you destroy them. And then there's like a football stadium floating in the sky. You go there and the boy band shows up, but they're like all tentacly. And it's like, okay, those are the infested liches. And it's a fucking boy band from the music that's been playing in the background the entire trailer. Right. And the advertisements for the band are all over the place. And it's a fucking boy band. Like, That's way cooler than anything I could have come up with. The lyrics for their song is so fucking funny. They make becoming infested sound really fun.
Well, I mean, that's a good idea, though, because, like, yeah, no, that is really fucking good.
Yeah, like, they could have been really generic about it, but they didn't. And I love that for them. I am super excited. I've never been more hyped to be a Warframe fan, honestly.
Yeah, no, that is really cool. So
what good news did you have for me now?
Well, you might remember there was a long time ago in some consoles far, far away, there was a game called Star Wars Bounty Hunter that was kind of a mediocre game. It was, the control scheme was hot ass, and that really held back the game. Asper, a company not known for doing a good job with their products that they're remastering, released the game 2 days ago, July 31st, and it has been getting very positive reviews on Steam because they added quality of life, they made a functional control scheme, they didn't just upgrade the graphics, they made things like flashlight actually light things up. Yeah, the lore stuff that, you know, like the small background lore stuff, you know, things that people actually care about, even though game reviewers don't ever care about it, they made those legible. Like, so there were like optional bounties that you could do while in missions, and you would have to scan them, but now they've added a kind of a time dilation effect while you're scanning targets, so you can actually read, you know, more than thus they're wanted. You can actually read the story behind them, so there's some fun stuff with that. But like, I think this is a really good story because remasters haven't really been good across the board. Some of them have been all right. Some of them have been good, straight up. A few have been good, but for the most part, like, the good remasters have been remastering games that aren't terribly old. You know, Last of Us got a remaster when it wasn't even 5 years old yet.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. They shouldn't have done that.
But like GTA's remaster was hot trash. I guess the Resident Evil remasters were pretty fucking good. My understanding.
And it's funny because the Star Wars Bounty Hunter game, was on PS Plus like forever. And I have it downloaded, I haven't played it, but it's like it's the original unpatched, not what you're describing at all.
Yeah.
I should just wait for this thing to come out and I should just play that.
Honestly, you can. You can play it right now for $19.99 USD. But they also, I want to point out something about this too. This is the old canon of Star Wars. So there's a screenshot here where a woman who's allowed to be sexy. Yeah. Look at this.
Oh, it's the chick with the two lightsabers, isn't it?
Yeah, you can see that. Look at that hip sway.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. But, like, not just that hot women or a woman that's portrayed as hot. Not
allowed.
Whether or not she is. Yeah, allowed to be hot. That's the thing. But, like, where I'm getting at with that is that it comes from an era where, like, no, we make games look as good. And then, because games are about escapism, I don't think many people want to escape into a place like Concord.
Right.
With, so obviously nobody wants to play Concord.
This was done by Aspyr Entertainment, mm-hmm. and they're the same people that made that Star Wars Battlefront one. Now, that one was launched to mixed reviews, or mostly negative reviews, and it looks like it didn't recover either. I guess reviews are mixed, but that's because they had no servers when they launched.
Right. Well, and also there didn't need to be, it didn't serve a purpose, honestly, either. That one, the Battlefront Classic Collection, because they didn't redo anything about it. They just kind of made it look prettier. But we have the 2005 version on Steam already. It's much cheaper.
Yeah. And
if you, like, their graphical enhancement, like easy download mods, make it look better than Aspyr did.
I agree. However, I would consider Aspyr's work here to be valuable if they had like a physical like Switch version, which they probably do.
They may, but Aspyr's work is valuable. They did Tomb Raider 1, 2, and 3 remastered, which my understanding people genuinely enjoyed those, the remasters of it. Because they do important things like updating the control schemes.
Yeah, and with the Tomb Raider remaster, it's like the Halo Master Chief Collection, where there's like a button you can press and it like turns it back to the old graphics.
Back to the old tank controls too,
mm-hmm.
if you are so inclined. But like that's Aspyr is they had a miss, but I think they've redeemed themselves with Bounty Hunter for the Classic Collection blunder.
Yeah. And I'm looking to expand my physical games collection, not only because my computer is in a sorry state, but like right now, if there's a physical copy on the Switch, preferably, I'll get it. If it's digital only, Steam Deck all the way, like I'll do it. But in the case of the Battlefront collection, it's like I already have 2005 version.
I do too, and like
I could just play that.
Some of the mods that I played with in the 2005 definitely are not coming to the remaster as well. Not just talking about graphical stuff, but like they're like actual like entirely new factions and new maps and things. Like I played one that was set in Old Republic time frame, and that one was really good. It was a three, they made a three-way fight on a map, and that was I had a lot of fun with that.
Okay, so I just looked it up real quick. There is no physical copy of Battlefront Collection. But,
hey, look, if they see success, if Aspyr sees success, their production may expand.
Yeah. And Bounty Hunter is a step in the right direction for all of that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think, but I've seen a lot of good-looking early access games. I personally try to avoid getting early access. That said, I do like seeing good-looking early access games. I don't like seeing Star Citizen games. I do like, forever development games that may or may not just be, money laundering schemes or stealing schemes.
The only forever games allowed are ethical live services like Warframe and anomalies like No Man's Sky.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and even then, like, I have, it goes back to the standing by things. Like, I'm sorry, No Man's Sky. I will never play you because I hate rewarding bad behavior of, like, we'll eventually get it to the 1.0 state. I mean, even Cyberpunk was, you know, took forever, what, a year? Like, they got the best on... I know they put in a lot of work, and I'm not dogging on CD Projekt Red, but, and everybody, and I know both you and Vic really liked the game. But, like, they shouldn't have won best ongoing game for bringing it to the 1.0 state, or the promised 1.0 state.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Whereas, I think No Man's Sky has done more work than Cyberpunk did. I wouldn't call them at their 1.0 state. I think they're at their, like, their 2 or 3.
Oh, absolutely. They're
they keep
better.
Adding shit.
Like, yeah. Well, they succeeded. They exceeded the 1.0 status.
Yeah. And it's like...
Absolutely.
Yeah, bad behavior to release it too early, but, like, I feel like... I don't want to say redeemed, but,
I feel
like
No Man's Sky was a little less than too early and more just a overpromising thing, but yeah.
Yeah, it was the guy that they didn't put duct tape over the mouth of the guy that kept promising bullshit.
Yeah.
More specifically, Sony was like, hey, that guy talks a lot, put him up front, and he's like, wait a minute, I'm not the community manager, and they're like, doesn't matter, get up there.
I'll just say I'm no longer mad at them.
No, but, yeah. I'm not mad at them. No. I'll never date them again, but, you know.
Yeah, that's fair. No, I think it's one of those moments where, like, I think on a personal level, that take perfectly fine. I think the issue comes where there's the people out there, in fact, we know a person like this, who will get mad at you for playing those games. And I think that's where it comes, is like, oh, come on, man. Like, it's fine if you think that's not acceptable. And to be fair, let's be real. I think all three of us agree that if it had released 1.0 out the gate, no problems, no bugs, we would have loved the game 1,000 times more.
Oh, obviously. Yeah.
I think the problem comes in is when you're like, nobody's allowed to like that game ever. Like, come on, man. Come on.
No, Vic, you're not allowed
to
like that.
I know you're not like that, Rick. I know you're not like that. I just mean, I think that's where the difference gets made, right? Yeah.
I have Cyberpunk. I played it.
Uh-huh. I bought it several times. Once for myself, once for myself on Xbox. I gifted it to you. and I, at least one other person.
Yeah.
Did I give it to both of you?
Maybe?
Yeah. That...
Did I buy it for myself? I actually don't remember.
I think I bought it for both of you.
Okay, well, okay, Dylan, you've bought the game a lot.
I know I bought the DLC. I at least got that. I don't remember the Friday, though. Huh.
Yeah, so I at least bought the game 4 times. That's another episode title contender.
I mean, yeah. No, that's absolutely a good... that's a good title. You bought the game at least 4 times.
Anyway, let's wrap this up.
I think that's a good part for us.
So, friends, Romans, countrymen, this has been the Melomancy Podcast, episode 92. You can catch me on the worldwide internets. My Fediverse address would be shitposter.world/Dylon. On Noster, you can find me with my Noster handle, which is @Dylon@Melomancy.cafe. Melomancy.cafe is also the address of our forum. We had our first spam account sign up. We banned his ass.
Woo. Yeah.
Woo, spam.
We made it, boys.
The fuck's CAPTCHA for? I don't know. Tell me if you see that shit again. Like, that was obviously not a real person.
Yeah, I got you.
Anyways, you can catch Vic on Twitch, twitch.tv/avictimofgaming, and you can catch Rick here at shitposter.world/skooma_dealer. That is the end of the episode. Goodbye, everybody.